If a disaster strikes you and your loved ones and you have no stored food, you'll be begging as well. Now our economy is slipping into an abyss that even Donald Trump says will make the Great Depression look like a Sunday picnic. The U.S. dollar is worth less today than it was even last week. Before food prices skyrocket, trucks stop running, and stores close their doors, Survival Enterprises can help you prepare. They're master distributors of Mountain House freeze-dried food with up to a 50-year shelf life. Survival Enterprises has
Broadcasting to the U.S. and around the world by way of clear digital audio, 22,500 miles above the planet. This is the Global Star Radio Network.
Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views and, well, hopefully the views of our special guest. Is our special guest there today? Well, I don't hear him, so we're going to have to just go ahead and hope that he will be calling in here. But, I mean, there's so many exciting, dangerous, frightening things that are going on today. And certainly one of the most significant ones is the whole monetary system of the world is collapsing. And when you see the largest banks here in the United States or financial houses, Merrill Lynch, Bear Stearns, Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, Morgan Chase, I mean, these multi-billion-dollar corporations are really having to go out and borrow money. I think the only one that's not in real trouble is Goldman Sachs. But, of course, what these companies have done, they've invested in a lot of faulty investments. And then on top of that, they have guaranteed to the people who bought these faulty investments that the people who owned the money on the loans would go ahead and pay them. In other words, this is a derivative contract where you promise that the contract will be acted upon and expediently, and if the individuals don't pay, then you will pay. You're going to make it up. And, of course, it's been a wonderful, wonderful means in the past of making a lot of money because most people paid on their mortgages. But, you know, with the car loans, the other things, the car loans could come into something called ABS or asset-backed securities. But the problem is that all of this has changed, and the people are not making the payments on their cars. They are not making the payments on their homes. And a lot of them just frankly can't afford to because with the creative financing they have, sometimes the cost is actually of the family mortgage has gone up 50% to 75%. They just don't have the money. Well, is our guest on the line there?
Dr. Stan?
Thank you so very much for being with us. So why don't you pick up the story? This is Dr. Joe Douglas, and we're going to be talking about the fact that he had an opportunity of spending a great deal of time with a general, a Czechoslovakian general who defected to the West. His name was Jan Senja, but he told Joe an awful lot about the things that are going on. So why don't you pick up the story?
Oh, it would be a pleasure, Dr. Stan. Jan Senja, General Senja from Czechoslovakia, was a tremendously unusual person. He was quite young when he was propelled to the top levels, really, of the Czech hierarchy. This came as a result of his own initiative in speaking out at a meeting against one of the top officials because he felt that that's what Khrushchev's policy called for. And it was extremely, I don't know whether you would call it courageous or foolhardy, but at any rate, Turned out that everybody else agreed with him that this individual needed to go, and he was, as a result of General Sena's speaking out, fired. And Sena, who at that time was a colonel, was promoted to the secretary of the defense council and chief of staff to the general, to the minister of defense, among two of a number of positions he held that were very high. Now, he was particularly unusual because he was not only committed to the program, particularly because of the people that explained it to him, really, people of the ilk of Khrushchev, who was really a Jan's mentor, you might call him. And he had a tremendous sense of the politics involved because of the schooling he went through in the as a political officer for the military.
All right, hold that thought, Joe. We'll be back. Right, the guest is Dr. Joe Douglas.
The war on terrorism, will it be fought overseas or will it affect us here at home? If you are like most folks, you want to be prepared but can't afford an underground shelter. So what do you do? Did you know that you can use your home as a shelter against fallout and biological or chemical attacks? With a little know-how, it's not that difficult. Sheltering in place, surviving acts of terrorism from biological, chemical, and radioactive fallout, developed by Wayne LeBaron, a health physicist who has served as a specialist in environmental health, communicable diseases, and has worked as a nuclear specialist for the U.S. government, gives you easy-to-follow video instructions and walks you step-by-step through the process of preparing your home as a shelter. Get this critical video every American needs for only $29 plus shipping. Order by calling New Millennium today at 888-803-4438. That's 888-803-4438. Or order on the web at berkeywater.com.
It's a fact. Since the creation of the Federal Reserve in 1913, all banks in these United States create money out of thin air for every single loan they issue. With never-ending late fees, over-the-limit fees, and higher interest rates, it has become mathematically impossible to repay all debt, making all of us slaves to our creditors. The Federal Debt Relief System has created a successful, attorney-backed program to legally eliminate credit card debt, personal loans, lines of credit, and other unsecured debts which have been fraudulently created by the banks. We can terminate your unsecured debt within 18 months with a much lower monthly payment, ending with nothing on your credit report. Join the thousands of Americans who now breathe with a sigh of relief because they have legally eliminated their debt. Instead of living each day in fear and frustration, it's time to take action and turn your life around. Call the Federal Debt Relief System at 877-943-8600. That's 877-943-8600. Or visit FDRS.org. Find out how you can break the cycle of debt slavery. Visit FDRS.org today.
Hi, I'm Joyce Riley, and many of you know that for years I was a cardiovascular heart transplant nurse. Since that time, I've educated myself on the importance of preventative care and cardio maintenance. It all begins with providing your heart and vascular system with the building blocks for good health. Strauss Heart Drops were developed by Jim Strauss after he suffered a heart attack in 1979. His doctor said he would only survive if he had heart bypass surgery. As a seventh-generation herbalist, Jim knew that there were herbs that had a long tradition of heart, blood, and circulation properties, and that there had to be another option besides going under the knife. Jim said no and began working on a formula to better himself and others. After he perfected the mixture of herbs and spices, he created Strauss Heart Drops. Get the Strauss Heart Drops 4-ounce bottle for only $79.95. Call the Power Hour at 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Now you really can do your heart right with Strauss Heart Drops.
Well, Dr. Stan here at the Genesis Communication Network. Our guest is Dr. Joe Douglas. And Dr. Douglas has been back in Washington, D.C. for many years. He worked for the government and intelligence for many years. He's written several books. One is called Red Cocaine, going into the communist involvement in the cocaine trafficking. And, of course, Dr. Douglas recognizes the part that certainly our intelligence agencies play in this as well. But nobody wants to talk about the fact that the communists are working in this as well. And that's Red Cocaine. And then, of course, the book that we do carry called Betrayed. And it's the story of the men we betrayed in the First World War and the Second World War and Korea and Vietnam. This men we left behind and were abandoned. But today we're going to be talking about the fact that Dr. Douglas had an opportunity to brief General Jan Senja on a number of occasions. And here was the highest ranking Soviet or at least East Bloc military officer ever to defect to the United States. And Joe had a chance to talk to him. He talked good English. He had a brilliant memory. And so you go ahead with the story there, Joe.
I'll be glad to, Dr. Stan. As I was saying, Jan Senja operated at the top of the Czech hierarchy. He was one of the three or four most knowledgeable people in Czechoslovakia about the policy and what was happening and what was really happening, which is often not what the even the decision documents led on to be the case. And he had a prodigious memory. And we got started talking out quite a bit about his defection and what he was debriefed on when he came over here. And that's where I really got interested, because it turned out that in his official debriefing, he was never debriefed on anything of strategic importance. His knowledge was right at the top. He knew what was happening throughout the communist world for the most part, because he met almost daily with different communist leaders from around the world and was part of the innermost briefings that Czechoslovakia received and of the decision-making process. So he knew what was happening. Now, as an example, I got interested in the drug problem back in the early 1980s, strictly on my own. And as I read things that were in the newspapers and in congressional hearings, it struck me very quickly that there was something wrong with this story that was being presented, because it never talked about the communist involvement. And it was quite clear that China was involved, and that from the involvement of people of Castro's leaders and of Nicaraguan people and Bulgarians, that none of them could be involved without the Soviet Union being involved. But there's no word about any of this any place in the newspapers or government reports. So I called him up and I said, "Jan, let's have lunch tomorrow." And over lunch, about halfway through, I just sort of casually asked him if he was aware of any communist involvement in narcotics trafficking. And he looked up and he said, "Of course." And his eyes lit up and he started off and he talked nonstop for a good half hour, almost the entire lunch. And he gave me, you know, times, places, people, how they started, where how the Chinese started, how the Soviets watched the Chinese and they picked it up. Khrushchev had it studied, then it became an official strategic intelligence operation, and it went active in 1960. And by 1968, they were pulling in so much money that they had to totally revamp the money laundering process that was involved. Now, this went on, and I ended up writing this book, Red Cocaine, primarily because I thought the people ought to know where the nature of our problem came from, and because the people in Washington who had the responsibility did not want to hear anything about it. So I basically wrote the book. And in the process, one of the things that came out very clear was a tremendous cooperation that was inherent between the communist and the financial systems that gear and run the world.
And I think that really is so very, very important. What became obvious was there was a great deal of cooperation between the communists and this group of financiers, this financial system that runs the world. But that's really what you're talking about, isn't it?
Absolutely. And, you know, a large number of people, when they start looking at this, the communist system in general, sooner or later, they run about into the information on the founding of the Soviet Union itself back in 1917, and the manner in which this was not any revolution, but a coup, and a coup that was financed by international finance, and the way the people that were involved as representatives of the different key financial magnates actually came to Russia to make sure the revolution proceeded in the proper manner and to bring all the financial funding that was required of Lenin and his friends. But then you start asking, well, what happened after that? And suddenly international finance disappears from the picture, and you don't really see them. And this struck me when I was talking with Senja, that international finance was absolutely critical, in the whole survival of communism, and particularly in the various nefarious operations it was running to bring about the destruction of the West. And it was also clear that the key people in international finance, the main banks, knew very well about it, and they were actually not just cooperating, but part of it. That came into my mind very clearly when Jan was talking about the money that was involved and the laundering of money. Well, they started off with a modest intelligence-operated money laundering system when the operation started in the early 60s. But there was so much coming in that about 1965, 66, they decided they had to totally revamp the nature of the money laundering system. Now, this was not done by Czech intelligence or Soviet intelligence directly. What happened is international finance stepped in, and they devised the entire money laundering operation. They identified the banks. They identified people within the banks from around the whole global world of financing to make sure that everybody that was involved in passing this money was trustworthy, dependable, and would not talk about what they were doing. They were all cleared, and as a matter of fact, Santa said that afterwards they had learned that there were background investigations that were undertaken with every single person that was involved in the money laundering system, and that these background investigations were actually conducted by the Mossad Intelligence Service, which gives you an idea of how well they were connected and where the lines of connection often went. Well, that was the big reconstruction of the money laundering system, and the Czechs would get the names of the people that they were to use in banks around the world, and not just big banks. Many of the times they preferred to use the small banks around the world, smaller because they attracted less attention. Banks in different small countries because they attracted less attention. Particularly one area that they really used quite a few banks from was Scandinavia, because they were not really known to be big in the drug business. At the same time, they were also using banks in Switzerland, in Austria, in Liechtenstein, in Spain, and other places, not to really launder large sums of money, but just to get into the area to better know how the banks operated and to be able to identify people that they could then relate better to within all these various banks. Now, it became evident that there was also a major function in the whole Soviet intelligence process, which did two things, which in a sense appear to be at odds, but really they're very complementary in the overall picture. One was that in devising deception operations, and the whole Warsaw Pact was heavily involved with this, one of the primary tasks that was levied on the various deception apparatus in the different countries was, as the Soviets put it, says, not to allow the spotlight of publicity to be placed on our friends, the banks.
In other words, the Soviet leaders looked upon the banks as their friends.
Absolutely.
Of course, what people don't understand is that powerful financial interests have been working with communism since its inception. If you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to get it. The other books we carry, Wall Street and the Bolshevik Revolution, The Best Enemies Money Could Buy, the DVD by the same name. And then, of course, we have this little pamphlet called The Communist Capitalist Alliance. The term is taken from Solzhenitsyn, who gave a talk with that title back in 1975 to the AFL-CIO and totally blacked out to the American people, because the last thing they want is for the American people to realize, of course, that the United States and our financiers are financing communism. And, of course, this information came out in the Reich Committee report back in 1953 and 1954, when the Congress investigated the tax-exempt foundations, Rockefeller, Ford, Carnegie, and found out that they were financing communism. I mean, that is just so incongruous. People found that so hard to believe. Well, of course, they didn't find it hard to believe, because most people never knew that. But I know when I found it, it didn't make any sense until I understand that communism is an authoritarian system and capitalism is an authoritarian system with a ruling elite and everybody else enslaved. Wage slavery, as it were. Go ahead, Dr. Douglas.
That's absolutely true, Dr. Stan. Neither of them would like to work more with any system than they do with a totalitarian system, because there's only one person in control, and that's the way they like it, because they can just, they can grease the palm of that one person, and then they can get the jobs done that they want, and they don't have to worry about what the people think, because the people are really largely irrelevant. This connection also struck me again as in taking another look at the materials that you developed there earlier this year. And you can see this alliance because of the critical events that are taking place. When you look at some of the main benefits that were channeled over to the Soviet Union, the first beginning of it was under Wilson. And, of course, who was Wilson's alter ego? None other than Colonel House, who himself was a Marxist and known better than anything else for his writing on books about the socialization.
Hold that thought, we'll be right back.
On the average, Americans work between 45 to 50 years, hoping to build up enough wealth to retire and live out their golden years. Unfortunately, with taxation, the rising cost of food, energy, housing, and medical, many retirees are forced to live below the poverty line. Is this a flaw of free enterprise, or is our monetary unit, we call the Federal Reserve Note, forcing us into perpetual debt, ensuring inflation and higher taxes? These questions and more can be answered by reading G. Edward Griffin's book, The Creature from Jekyll Island. Congressman Ron Paul states it's what every American needs to know about central bank power. A gripping adventure into the secret world of international banking cartel. Hi, this is Ted Anderson. I will give a silver dollar from the early 1900s to anyone who purchases this book. Call 1-800-686-2237 and order a copy today. It's critical that the public be made aware of the system. Call and order your copy today at 1-800-686-2237. That's 1-800-686-2237.
Through the years of providing water filters to America, you've come to us and we've listened. You asked us to make the water level visible to eliminate the guesswork when refilling the water. We listened. You asked for an elevated base so the system could be used in places beside on the edge of a counter. We listened. You asked us to develop a filter that was made in the USA. We listened. You asked us to include an emergency light for camping and during power outages. We listened. After 9/11, you asked us to develop a filter that was more powerful in removing chemical agents. Again, we listened. Introducing the Berkey Light, the gravity filter requested by America, designed by Americans, and made in America.
Get the Berkey Light, the American water purifier, only $279. Call New Millennium, 888-803-4438. That's 888-803-4438, or order on the web at berkeywater.com. Not yet available in Iowa.
Some people believe a group of wealthy men control political parties, the American media, and the wealth of our nation. Is this true? Dr. Stanley Monteef spent 40 years studying secret societies and subversive movements. He lived in Africa for 3 years, and when he returned home, he studied the writings of the men who shaped the modern world. His book, Brotherhood of Darkness, identifies the people who control the world and the organizations they created. Dr. Monteef exposes the movement behind Rhodes Scholarships, the origin of the Council on Foreign Relations, and the myths surrounding communism. He discusses the goal of all covert organizations, so if you read Brotherhood of Darkness, you will learn a secret that has been passed down through the centuries. When you learn this secret, you will understand what the future holds and what you must do to help preserve our nation. Call and order your copy. 877-300-7645. Only $12.95. That's 877-300-7695.
Since the year 2000, earthquakes, heat waves, droughts, tsunamis, floods, fires, and hurricanes have killed over 1 million people worldwide and forced tens of millions to go without food and water. After Katrina, the media was eager to show victims in New Orleans begging for food. If a disaster strikes you and your loved ones and you have no stored food, you'll be begging as well. Now our economy is slipping into an abyss that even Donald Trump says will make the Great Depression look like a Sunday picnic. The U.S. dollar is worth less today than it was even last week. Before food prices skyrocket, skyrocket, trucks stop running, and stores close their doors, Survival Enterprises can help you prepare. They're master distributors of Mountain House freeze-dried food with up to a 50-year shelf life. Survival Enterprises has real butter, cheese, and bread, real beef, chicken, and turkey, all canned for long-term storage. For their website and more info, call 1-800-753-1981. That's 1-800-753-1981. And remember, if you wait until you need us, it's too late. Call now.
Well, Dr. Stan back here at the Genesis Communication Network, and certainly our guest is Dr. Joe Douglas, and he had the unique opportunity of working with Jan Senna, who was a general, Czechoslovakian general, and Senna really recognized the relationship between international finance and the communist movement. Now, this is what the average American is never allowed to know. Why would international finance be financing communism? Why, very, very simply, we needed an enemy. If you didn't have an enemy, how would you get the people to pay their taxes, rally them behind the government, support a massive military, and create an empire? We've got to have an empire to protect us from the wicked communists that we're financing. And once you begin to see what's going on, the whole pattern comes into place. And that's why Solzhenitsyn referred to the Communist-Capitalist Alliance. And let me suggest you get that pamphlet. It's five of our newsletters from last year that I think put these things into very clear perspective. And you can get that by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. It's the Communist-Capitalist Alliance. Inexpensive, but vitally important. Of course, we hope you'll get all the other books and DVDs and videos as well. But go right ahead, Dr. Douglas.
Yeah, one of the things that Soviets and the Communist Intelligence Services generally have is an excellent service for protecting their sources and to advancing them in the ranks. Thus, with the general idea of a communist operation is you get a penetration in an organization, and when somebody gets in there who is an agent and has penetrated, such as in our own government, their primary responsibility over the rest of their time in there is to assist other people to penetrate and come into the organization. And at the same time, they're all working to protect the identities of the people that are in the organization. So in this way, you may think there are four or five people in an organization just because they were identified as a number of communist agents, such as was done with the Von Neumann papers that identified roughly 100 communists in the OSS, of which about 30% of them were believed to be active agents, as in the World War II time frame. And you know immediately that's just the ones we knew about, because each one of these people had his responsibility to bring other agents into the area, which is why the tremendous penetration within U.S. intelligence had such a running start right from the beginning. Now, in the banks, coming back to the banks in 1965 were identified as one of the top three penetration priorities for Soviet intelligence and Warsaw intelligence. And this because it was not only because of their relationship with the big banks, but there were a lot of other banks that are around that were not as big as the big international banks. And for those banks and other ones in general, they recognized the tremendous value of the banks, because the banks had access to people in areas of policy. They also had access to industry, because industry was where the banks were, where industry came to get their loans, and they all had to explain, you know, what they were doing and this technology and that technology. So the banks were actually a tremendously good source of technology intelligence information or espionage. So they were a very good asset to have on your side for that reason. And thus they penetrated banks for that way. They also knew that a lot of the corruption information around the world lay in the bank accounts within the banks. And so by being coupled into the banks from the inside, they were able to, by working their way in, to have a good knowledge of of where the large bank accounts were that people were hiding. And so as a seance of it, they explained that they knew about all the secret banks of Marcos and other politicians in Luxembourg and Liechtenstein and other banks of that ilk. And that information was not used just for curiosity, but actually to make it pay off, which they did often at the highest political levels, which is a tremendous asset to the policy formulation and getting other people's policies to support the Russian policy, which is, of course, their ultimate objective. Now, the money laundering process that went on and really started gathering speed with the advancing of money in the mid-60s, a good example of that and the attitudes were some of the conversations with the big German banks that they had. And by big, we're talking about the biggest in Germany. Often it wasn't clear whether it was the Deutsche Bank we were talking about or the Bundesbank.
Hold on. I will be right back in just a moment with Dr. Joe Douglas talking about the relationship between the communists and international finance, a relationship nobody wants to talk about. We'll be right back.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Now you can enjoy the most delicious, freshest, and healthiest drinking water anytime, even while traveling, during outdoor sporting activities, and in hospital filtration environments such as local or national emergencies. The revolutionary Berkey Light removes pathogenic bacteria, cysts, parasites, and harmful or unwanted chemicals to below detectable levels. It also removes foul tastes and odors like that rotten egg smell of sulfide, and it reduces nitrates and unhealthy minerals like lead and mercury while leaving in the healthful and nutritional minerals your body needs. The Berkey Light is so powerful it can purify raw, untreated water from remote lakes, streams, and stagnant ponds. The Berkey Light is transparent and glows in the dark with its rechargeable LED lighting system, so it can be used as a night light or camp light.
Get the Berkey Light Purifier for only $279. Call New Millennium 888-803-4438. That's 888-803-4438, or order on the web at berkeywater.com. Not yet available in Iowa.
Do you need more than just the constant news of impending tyranny? Yes, this is Elizabeth Border back with The Divided Kingdom, the hour that analyzes spiritual and cultural issues too. Lou Blanchard and I are delighted, thanks in large part to past listeners' lobbying efforts. Now to be on the great Genesis Communications Network Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Central, formidable Alex Jones says, this is the network often imitated, but never duplicated. Lou and I made the conscious decision to move to GCN because of its classy lineup and leadership. We invite you to hear our program, one we pray will strengthen and bless you. Indeed, trouble is part of the story, but the fellowship of faith surpasses it. Tune in at 6 p.m. Central with The Divided Kingdom.
I'm Joyce Riley, and many of you know that for years I was a cardiovascular heart transplant nurse. Since that time, I've educated myself on the importance of preventative care and cardio maintenance. It all begins with providing your heart and vascular system with the building blocks for good health. Strauss Heart Drops were developed by Jim Strauss after he suffered a heart attack in 1979. His doctor said he would only survive if he had heart bypass surgery. As a seventh-generation herbalist, Jim knew that there were herbs that had a long tradition of heart, blood, and circulation properties, and that there had to be another option besides going under the knife. Jim said no and began working on a formula to better himself and others. After he perfected the mixture of herbs and spices, he created Strauss Heart Drops. Get the Strauss Heart Drops 4-ounce bottle for only $79.95. Call the Power Hour at 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Now you really can do your heart right with Strauss Heart Drops.
Joe, would you like to mention your website or how people could get your book, Red Cocaine? Now, we do carry, through Radio Liberty, the Betrayed. We think it's an important book, and And if you get after me off the air, I'll carry Red Cocaine as well. I think it's an important book, too. But is there a website, and how can people actually get the book?
Yes, there is a website where it's available, and that's at it's at edwardharrell.com, and it can also be reached at worldreportslimited.com. And that's the publisher who does the book. It's also available at amazon.com, but the publisher is probably a quicker avenue for to get it. You know, there's an interesting vignette out of the Kempston Mine that Santa was having a lunch with one of the top German banking officials. They had a team that was working with the Czech team in intelligence there, and they were devising large bogus public works projects that would serve as a cover for moving large amounts of cash between East and West. And again, the people most able to devise those things were the people that worked with them most often, namely the banks. And at lunch one time, Santa stopped in to see how things were going, and he happened to ask one of the lead officials whether they mind working with the Soviet Union. And the comment that came back, as Jan described it, and he had a fabulous memory for people and conversations, the guy said, the Soviet Union? Nah, they don't bother us. What bothers us is our big enemy. That's Chase Manhattan, not the Soviet Union. So that was sort of their attitude with respect to worrying about working with communism. Communists, it didn't make much difference. Now, this is also, you know, this brings to mind another thing that came up in some work that Norm Bailey was doing when he was over at the NSC back in the Reagan administration. They started worrying about terrorism, and they started using the National Security Agency to actually do intercepts on banking transactions. And they started looking at where some of these banking loans went from the United States. And they followed one, which is an activity of interest, as it was described, which is a $600 million loan that was lead managed by the First Chicago Bank. And it was sent out to the East German Außenhandelsbank. And after following the money transfers, they learned that the loan was cleared in London. That the money then went to East Berlin to the Außenhandelsbank and was distributed from there to various front companies and various tax havens around the world. It went to Libya and there was sent to various accounts that were controlled by terrorist organizations. And about $60 million of the original tranche that was drawn from the bank ended up in the coffers of various terrorists and guerrilla groups around the world. Funding, among others, the Red Brigades in Germany, the IRA in Northern Ireland, and the M19 forces in Colombia.
And so, what you're really saying is
$20 million out of that deal.
So, what you're really saying is the communists were funding the World Terror Network,
right? Loans from the United States. Now, the banking was really sort of just to set the stage for two of the most important things that Santa told me over our 15 years plus. Time that we knew each other. And one of them, when we were discussing the banks, and actually, which came up several times, but two times he looked at me very seriously and he said, never was there a decision made in Moscow that international finance was not present.
Never was there a decision made in Moscow where international finance was not present. And I think that's the message we really want to give to our listeners today. Most of what you think you know about communism just isn't true. Go right ahead, Dr. Douglas.
Yeah, and the reason for going into a lot of Santa's background is he knew what was happening. You know, if you look at the position he had, and actually there are various positions, but they continued, and he was in the top level positions for 15 years. And his positions were much broader in terms of responsibility, access, and knowledge than, for example, Henry Kissinger's responsibilities were when he was head of the NSC for President Nixon. to give you an idea of how high he was placed in the Czech Communist organization, because he was the chief of staff to the Minister of Defense. He was in charge of everything that came into the Ministry of Defense, everything went out, and of explaining all the policies that were too sensitive to be done in writing to all the key officials throughout the defense area. He was also a key member within the Administrative Organs Department itself, and that's the Central Committee Department that has control over the military, the intelligence, and the Justice Department. On top of that, he ran the Secretariat of the Defense Council, and the Defense Council is the highest-ranking decision-making body in the communist system, particularly with respect to defense, intelligence, counterintelligence, the economy, and foreign policy. That was the number one position. Nothing went to the Politburo in that area, those areas, that wasn't first cleared by the Defense Council. It was that important. And he ran the secretary. He planned all the meetings. He held the agenda. He drafted all the decision papers that were going out and authorized those that were coming in, briefed people on what was happening. He was totally capable and totally coupled in. He was even, you know, there's one of their main items, most important items in the Soviet area is deception. It's part of every single decision that is made. There's always what they called a deception plan, which was the deception to facilitate the implementation of the decision. In preparation for every five-year plan, there was a special team which came from the key members of the 10 agencies most coupled into the deception operations. And these people would review what happened over the past 5 years and the successes and failures, and then they would write the guidelines for the next 5 years based on the policy that was about to be approved. Sena was a member of that very special deception planning committee four times in a row, almost unheard of. So not only did he know the policies that were being considered on the inside of defense, the Defense Council, the Administrative Organs Department, but in addition to that, he also knew all the covers and deceptions that were going on to implement the policies, to keep things running well by changing everybody's mind and not letting anybody know what was happening. So again, he was in a position to know about all these things.
Why
he said something like that about international finance, he was the type of person that knew what he was talking about.
Why did he finally defect to the West?
In the middle of February 1968, he was in talking to one of his friends at the Administrative Organs Department, and sitting on his desk was a very classified report from the Soviet Union, Soviet intelligence, actually. And the guy went out of the room, and while he was out of the room, Sena just sort of started leafing through it. And it was the plan for Czechoslovakia and the invasion that took place in summer of 68. And the minute Sena saw what was happening, this had him very concerned, because he didn't want happening in Czechoslovakia what happened in Hungary. And he knew what was the political background on it, because they had just had a changeover from the old president to a new one, from Dubček to Dubček, and so he called and set an appointment to go over and see the new president, and he talked to him and basically explained what he knew, where the events were headed, and said that, and he made several suggestions, which was his reason for going over there, because he knew the Soviets better than probably anybody else in Czechoslovakia other than the Soviets themselves, because his purpose in one of his missions at the Defense Department was to make sure that all the policies were aligned with the Soviet policy and all the actions. And so he laid out a program for the new president to show him how he thought they could obviate the need for the invasion and possibly forestall it, if not eliminate it entirely. Well, he evidently did not stop to recognize that the Soviets might have had the president's office bugged. But 3 days later, he, this was getting into the end, into the weekend, he learned that that he was going to be arrested on Monday, and that his immunity from arrest as a member of the parliament was being lifted. And he learned from somebody else that he was going to be implicated in some crimes that were attributed to one of the lower-level employee in his department that caused trouble about 4 months earlier. He saw the handwriting on the wall immediately, and he knew that the long knives were out and they were going to get him. So he had wanted to leave, and he decided he could no longer postpone it. And so that weekend, he decided with his son that, well, let's go for a skiing trip. And so they headed out with his son and his son's fiancé, and went across the border, crossing over into, I think it was first Hungary and then Yugoslavia, to get over to Trieste. A little bit of a harrowing time, but it was snowing, the weather was bad, it was Sunday, and so he was able to talk their way by all the borders and get into Trieste. So that's why he defected.
Okay, fine. Well, certainly it was a very, very important deception, and yet, as you've told me in the past, American intelligence wasn't really very interested in talking to this man, were they?
No. Yeah, you know, when I first met him, that was a rather peculiar thing, and not enough time to go into that, but I first talked to him about what he'd been debriefed on, so I would know where to, you know, what the lay of the land was a little bit. And after we talked on this for about an hour, and I talked a little bit about other things for an hour, it just struck me that there was an inconsistency. He was talking being debriefed on a bunch of trivial stuff while he was sitting over here with the family jewels right in the palm of his hand. Nobody wanted to know about him. And so I went back into the intelligence area and picked up all the intelligence reports that were written on his debriefings. And I got them all and went through them, and they were exactly what he said he had been debriefed on. And interesting aspect about that is one of the things that he told them that was the most important information that he thought he brought with him was the details on the long-range strategic plan for the next 10 to 15 years and the years beyond, but that he wouldn't talk about it until the decision to grant him a political asylum had been made. And then after the decision was made, nobody ever debriefed him on that long-range plan, which was the basis of all the other planning.
Well, did you ever talk to him about it?
Yes, I spent about a half a year going through that along with some other stuff at the same time, and I never wrote that up. That's one of the few things I wanted to spend more time on that, but what I wrote down was about 25 or so single-spaced pages on this encyclopedic approach to planning on all the things they were doing. And
well, did they plan the fall of the Soviet Union back there in the 70s?
Pardon?
Did they plan the fall of the Soviet Union back in the 70s? In other words, have the Soviet Union fall and then they could go ahead and get all sorts of aid from the West?
No, I think that was really hadn't been formulated back then. I knew they had real troubles and were taking actions to try and figure out how to fix their own system that was broke, and they knew it was broke, particularly the intelligence services that had most of the access. And that was one of the reasons for the formation of a number of various institutes in the early 1970s designed to look at economies around the world and different systems to see what they might beg, borrow, or steal from that.
Well,
came with Andropov's moving over into the general secretary position.
Well, was General Senna really aware of the significance of the fact that the highest levels of the communists were working with international finance? It wasn't that sort of a violation of the concept of communism, which looked upon as the capitalists as the enemy?
Well, you got to remember most of the communist rhetoric and ideology is deception, about 90% deception. And it's all about power and taking of power and kicking out the people that work. It's a very elitist operation, and he knew about it. He was one of the few people that knew about it. He knew communism better than a professor of Marxism-Leninism that had defected that I also debriefed. Matter of fact, that guy had a good understanding of Marxism-Leninism, but he did not understand the deception aspect, nowhere near like Sena did. And again, on the reason he knew so much, say, about the also the interaction of finance and communism was that in his role as Secretary of the Defense Council, or in that role and in his chief of cabinet to the Minister of Defense, he had control over a number of what are called villas. And these were secure houses scattered around Prague where very sensitive meetings could be held and where people could have private conversations or where people could be kept for a particular short period of time. And he ran all of those under his office as chief of cabinet that were under the Ministry of Defense. And he also was aware of all the ones and who was using them in the Defense Council because he has the head of the Secretariat. And with that brings us to the second thing that he mentioned about international finance. It was so critical. He said that, you know, never did a week go by while he was in power for 15 years straight that there was not a meeting held in one or more of the secret villas between Soviet intelligence and international finance.
And of course, this gets us into these organizations that work behind the scenes, you know, behind communism, behind the international financiers. Well, we're out of time, Dr. Douglas. Thank you so very much for being with us. Fascinating. And we'll be looking forward to talking to you again in the near future.
Pleased to do that, Dr. Stan.
God bless. Thanks so much.
Bye-bye now.
All right, fine. And again, Dr. Douglas has written the book Betrayed. He's written the book Red Cocaine. Both well worthwhile getting, and we will be getting the book Red Cocaine and carrying it. We do have the Betrayed in stock. We think it's a very important book. And believe me, we are being betrayed today. We'll be back in just a moment.
Terrorism, chemical attacks, dirty bombs, fallout, biological attack, anthrax, and to top it all off, duct tape and plastic. Alarming words for our time. But how do you protect your family during such a crisis? The video Sheltering in Place, Surviving Acts of Terrorism from Biological, Chemical, and Radioactive Fallout was developed by Wayne LeBaron, a health physicist who has served as a specialist in environmental health, communicable diseases, and has worked as a nuclear specialist for the U.S. government. Anyone can follow the simple instructions. It's presented by a housewife as they walk you step-by-step through the process of preparing your home as a shelter. If you're not the type who waits till it's too late, then you need the video Sheltering in Place. Get the critical information you need now for only $29 plus shipping by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438 and tell them Alex Jones sent you. That's 888-803-4438 or order on the web at murkywater.com.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
Have you ever thought about what's in your shampoo, soap, or detergent? How about chlorides, dyes, ethanol, sulfates, sodium, formaldehydes, and more? Even fragrance can indicate the presence of some 4,000 separate ingredients, most of which are synthetic. Hi, this is Alex Jones. I was shocked when I discovered I could be inhaling these additives that can lead to coughing, wheezing, and shortness of breath, headaches, nausea, irritation of the skin, and mucous membranes. Now compare Calben Pure Soap. All natural, earth-friendly, no harsh chemicals, no animal testing. They're safe, and you save 85% of the money you're spending on cleaning products now. Start saving over $1,000 a year for your family of four. Keep it natural. Call Calben Pure Soap for a free catalog at 1-800-340-7091 or log on to 5starsoap.com. Try Calben Pure Soaps, and I'll bet you'll never use any other cleaning products again. Call 1-800-340-7091 for all your cleaning needs.
Back here at the Genesis Communication Network, and certainly our guest, Joe Douglas. We carry his book, Betrayed, if you haven't read it, the story of the men we abandoned, and the Second World War, and the Korean War, and the First World War. And if you want documentation on that, we have something from the Senate Foreign Relations Committee we call the Helms Committee Report. You need to have the documentation for what we say. As far as the relationship between international finance and communism, let me suggest the pamphlet we put together. It's only $3.95 plus shipping. It's called The Communist Capitalist Alliance. The Communist Capitalist Alliance, it's a compilation of four or five of my newsletters that really have great information in them. Then we have the book Wall Street and the Bolshevik Revolution, The Best Enemies Money Could Buy, the book, the DVD. You need to get this information. You need to have it available. And then, of course, one of the finest books on this subject is Foundations, Their Power and Influence. It was written by the Council for the Reich Committee, a congressional committee that investigated the great tax-exempt foundations back in 1953 and 1954. And you know what they found? They found that the tax-exempt foundations were funding communism and socialism. Why? Well, for the same reason they were funding communism over there in the Soviet Union, and money was funneling from the Federal Reserve into the Soviets. So we just print up the money and give it to them. Oh, we wanted the best enemy money could buy. Certainly an excellent analysis of this story you'll find in my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. We tell you the story of Bella Dodd, a member of the Central Committee of the Communist Party. Bella Dodd, you know, was totally dedicated to communism until one day she asked one of the Soviet diplomats, you know, what they would do during the Second World War if they lost contact with the with Moscow. How would they know the official party line? He said, "Oh, that's easy. Just go off over to the Wall Street Astoria, and there's three fellas there, and you could ask any one of them. They can give you the official party line." And suddenly she realized these were three of the largest capitalists in America. And she realized she'd given her whole life to a lie. Well, the information is there, so we hope many of you will want to get it. Our number is 1-800-544-8927. The book is Brotherhood of Darkness. That's Brotherhood of Darkness. And you need to have the information that's in that book. It will help you. It's got an index. And then it will take you to the other books, so you can begin to realize that most of what you've been told just isn't true. There's been an organized effort to conceal the truth from the American people, and it's time that we took America back. Well, we do hope that you'll call 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927, the pamphlet, The Communist Capitalist Alliance, the books, Wall Street and the Bolshevik Revolution, The Best Enemy Money Could Buy, DVD, The Best Enemies Money Could Buy, the book Foundations, Their Power and Influence, and Brotherhood of Darkness. Now, my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, that'll get you started. Until you begin to be able to think independent. I mean, they want you to honestly believe that communism is a threat, the communists are wicked. Yes, they are a threat. Yes, they are wicked. But, of course, they're being funded by people here in the United States, just as we funded the wicked Saddam Hussein, and every time the Iraqi people tried to get him out of office, the Iraqi military, why we betrayed the leaders of the opposition, and they were, of course, arrested and killed. the book See No Evil by Robert Baer, who was a CIA agent working in Iraq during the 1990s. See No Evil, we have that. You need to get the information. It's available from Radio Liberty. And then you've got to help us get it out, because we're dependent upon you. And we can't do it without you. Please, of course, pray for Radio Liberty. Pray for our leaders and our ministers. But pray that the America will turn back to God, because if there's not a revival in this country, I think there's very little chance that we will survive as a nation. We'll be back in just a moment here.
Hello, folks. Alex Jones here, introducing Prudent Places USA, an interactive CD book that is your premier resource for hard-to-find information. Find out about everything from job migration to evacuation information, such as major bridges in disrepair, and FEMA evacuation time studies for coastal cities. Zero in on man-made disaster zones, environmental areas of concern, and natural disaster zones. Find out everything from where to get water in an emergency to geographic income levels. Housing prices, complete with over 3 gigabytes of detailed information on the 3,000-plus counties in the U.S., full-color photographs, 550 high-resolution full-color maps, and detailed information and analysis that you need. Order Prudent Places USA now for only $29 plus shipping by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438 and tell them how...
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Joel Skousen from World Affairs Brief. Hi, Joel. How are you doing?
I'm just fine, Dr. Stan, and Happy New Year to you.
Yeah, well, thank you so much, and to you and your family as well. So, what are we going to be talking about this afternoon?
Well, the top story for this week's brief is going to be the assassination of Benazir Bhutto, specifically why the cover-up. Conspiracy theories are swarming around the assassination of the former Pakistani prime minister. And for good reason. From the fatal assault onward, the government of President Pervez Musharraf was involved in suppressing, covering up, and distorting the facts surrounding the killing. And an autopsy, which is mandatory under this criminal aspect, was prohibited by orders of the police. Bhutto was buried within 24 hours, very quick by Pakistani standards, and a steady stream of falsehoods began to issue forth from the government relative to how she was killed. All of these facts by the government were now proven false by amateur videos showing the actual event. You know, this is kind of shades of the JFK assassination. You had the amateur film cameras at work there, and even though the government tried their best to run around and collect all the evidence, basically to suppress it, these things get out more and more now that we have the proliferation of digital video cameras and even cameras on cell phones. So if Musharraf's government was innocent of any involvement, why the cover-up? As is in the assassinations of JFK, RFK, and MLK, or Martin Luther King, it's always the government cover-up after the fact that provides the most powerful evidence of complicity in the act. If there was no involvement, no protection of criminal acts, then there's no reason for obstructing justice, for suppressing facts that point to the presence of government agents or provocateurs. And that's what we found in the assassination of all the three major figures in the past in the United States. We had the presence of mafia figures who also worked for the CIA. We had Mossad people. We had a variety of people that all had connections with the CIA. And we find out in their deathbed confessions now that they, in fact, were ordered by the CIA to take out JFK. And so it's funny how, or tragic, actually, how many, many years later, finally the facts come out. And it's only been a week since the assassination of the prime minister, or the former prime minister, but already we're finding out a lot of facts that challenge the official Musharraf government position. Of course, Musharraf is scrambling to appear as neutral and an honest investigator of the facts, even publishing photos of the decapitated head of the suicide bomber slash shooter with his potential accomplices, asking for public help in identifying those subjects.
Go right ahead.
But almost all of these black operations, have a suitable patsy trained or mind controlled to do the very act. And what we find now is there evidence that there were other shooters. Everyone's focusing on the single shooter, and naturally the government is too, and that's the reason, basically, that they put out the photograph to make sure that people focus on this as the one person who shot her. Worst government spooks, you know, will almost always attempt to attach blame to some anti-government group, some opposition party, having that patsy become a member of the group before they do the act.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this afternoon is Joel Skousen from World Affairs Brief. And he's talking about what's going on in Pakistan and the assassination of Mrs. Bhutto and the fact that the government is doing everything they can there to prevent a full investigation, no autopsy. They put out a story that, of course, she hit her head as she was ducking back down, and that's what killed her. Of course, there are videos that have now come out that show at least one shooter in the area, but it's quite obvious that the Pakistani government is covering up the truth about the murder of a rival to the current leader of Pakistan, General Musharraf. So there are real problems here. And then the question is, what is this really all about? It looks to me like this is going to end up totally destabilizing Pakistan. There are riots there. People are being killed. I don't know how many have been killed so far, but an awful lot of people have been killed in the fighting. You go right ahead, Joel.
Well, Global Research of Canada describes the circumstances of the city where this assassination took place. It was anything but neutral territory. Bhutto was assassinated in Rawalpindi, no ordinary city. Rawalpindi is a military city host to the headquarters of the Pakistani Armed Forces and military intelligence, the dreaded ISI. Ironically, Bhutto was assassinated, said Global Research, in an urban area tightly controlled and guarded by the military police and the country's elite forces. Rawalpindi is swarming with ISI intelligence officials, which invariably infiltrate political rallies where assassination, they claim, is not a haphazard event. Without evidence, quoting Pakistan government sources, the Western media in chorus has highlighted the role of Al-Qaeda, which also, while also focusing on the possible involvement of the ISI. You know, it's very interesting, you know, the established media will never tolerate any conspiracy theories that implicate our own CIA or dark side black operations. And yet they're very easy to entertain conspiracy theories concerning the secret services of Pakistan. But what these interpretations do not mention is the ISI continues to play a key role in overseeing Al-Qaeda on behalf of U.S. intelligence, says Global Research. The reports fail to mention two important and well-documented facts. One, the ISI maintains close ties to the CIA. It's virtually an appendage to the CIA. And two, Al-Qaeda is a creation of the CIA. The ISI provides covert support to Al-Qaeda, acting on behalf of U.S. intelligence. That's the end of Global Research's quote. I've been saying this for years.
Hold that thought right there for just a moment. We'll bring our other stations back on board here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Chris Joel is suggesting, and I believe this is true, that the Central Intelligence Agency has been finding Al-Qaeda since it was formed, and we have a number of books that were written before the 9-1-1 attack that tells exactly that story. And certainly anybody who wants to know who was funding the Taliban before the 9-1-1 attack is only to listen to President Bush's speech. It's up on his website, 20th of September of 2001, just 9 days after the 9-11 attack. And there President Bush says, the United States is the largest source of financial aid or humanitarian aid for Afghanistan, which means the Taliban, of course. So if the Taliban were so weak, so wicked, why were we funding them? I'm not suggesting they weren't wicked and there were things that they did that we certainly disapprove of, but they're the same things they do in Saudi Arabia as far as decapitating people and cutting off their hands and following Sharia law. So nothing as it appears to be, and I think that Joel is entirely right, that Al-Qaeda was created by the West, and if you doubt that, we carry a book called The Devil's Game that goes into the funding of so many of the terrorist movements. Where did the Islamic terrorist movement come from? Why, ladies and gentlemen, your pocketbook. We've created the best enemy that money could buy. Joel, go ahead and pick up the story.
I think it's important to point out that Al-Qaeda is controlled at the top level only. Obviously, many of the local terrorists recruited by Al-Qaeda don't realize that they are, in fact, working for to foment terrorism, courtesy of the CIA. All they have to do is control the top levels of Al-Qaeda, and that's why they never found Osama bin Laden. I mean, he works for the CIA. McClatchy News describes the wildly inconsistent stories that emerged from the Pakistani government. Initially, the government had said that the flying shrapnel killed Bhutto after a shooting and suicide bombing as she left the political rally. The country's interior minister then said that Bhutto had died after she was thrown against the lever of her car's sunroof, fracturing her skull. Somehow, you know, you have to wonder, there were people, part of the Bhutto family and other people, part of the party who were in that vehicle who accompanied her to the hospital, who saw the extent of her wounds, which I'll quote what they're about. I mean, how did they think that they can get away with saying something like bumping her head against a car and fracturing her skull, when in fact there are numerous witnesses to the huge hole in her head, two shots, actually, and a copious amount of blood. I mean, that just doesn't happen by bumping your head against a lever on a sunroof. That is not capable of removing a major portion of the person's skull. Somehow, I believe, the Pakistani authorities didn't want the public to believe she had been shot, which would have led to the mandatory autopsy, which is mandated by law, and the requirement to recover the bullets, do other forensic exams that could trace the bullet's origin. And the reason I believe that they suppressed this is that there were multiple shooters. They want to make sure that there's a lone gunman theory, just like the Oswald theory in JFK, and he's shooting one particular weapon. But it's obvious from the description of what happened to her head that a high-powered rifle bullet was fired from another direction. And obviously, if those bullet fragments are still there, they would not match what the single shooter was thinking or was firing. And that's why I think they had to shut down the autopsy and bury her without that, going back into the detail about the bullets. They continue saying, the new version of events fueled ever-present conspiracy theories in Pakistan, a nuclear-armed nation that's on the front lines of President Bush's war on terrorism and risks sliding further into political chaos. This is a perfect example, Dr. Stan, of how the media parrots the standard line. This statement, on the front lines of President Bush's war on terror, reinforcing that Pakistan is essential to our salvation in America, that it risks sliding further into chaos if we, therefore, we must support Musharraf, right? A statement that is frequently added to all these establishment reporters meant to justify, quote, international concern about the intervening to safeguard this rogue nation's nuclear weapons program. British sources claimed this week that the U.S. has already put special forces on alert for possible intervention. Of course, that intervention, if it happened, would be to save Musharraf, not the nukes. The Pakistanis responded with outright disdain to this claim, saying, we are perfectly capable of safeguarding our own nuclear weapons, which I'm sure they are. And that's why if there are any alert forces, it's to safeguard Musharraf from being overthrown.
All right, fine. Well, anyway, of course, they have a terrible instability there. The people know that the government was implicated in the assassination of Bhutto. She had a lot of followers. And whether she was a perfect person or not, it really doesn't matter. She was assassinated, and I think with full of complicity of the armed forces, which were under the control of Musharraf, who did not want to have to go to an election and run against Bhutto. So this is how you take care of the opposition. You simply kill them. It's a standard operating procedure. It's been done in many countries, and why should we be surprised what happened in Pakistan? Do you think the Americans knew this was going to happen? You know, Bhutto had wanted to hire the Blackwater people to guard her so she'd have her own personal bodyguards. And apparently somebody put the kibosh on that.
Well, Blackwater claims, of course, that they... The contract simply was not finished, and I think they were dragging their feet. I think the evidence, although there is no specific evidence, you know, of Blackwater's knowledge, given their propensity to work within the dark side of government and the closeness with the Bush administration, it wouldn't surprise me if there was some collusion there. And I think you're absolutely right. Even the press tried to spin the aspect of all of the rioting against Musharraf, claiming that they were rioting in Pakistan because of the lack of security for Bhutto. But if you listen to the tapes, and I've had sources from Pakistan tell me if you listen to the tapes in Pakistan, they're saying Musharraf is a murderer, Musharraf is a murderer. They're not talking about lack of security. They really believe that the president knocked him off. He was asked that question directly by a British reporter at a news conference I just listened to, and he hotly denied it, said, beneath my dignity to deny it, and then he went ahead and made an issue of it, talking about I was raised with a family with values and we don't assassinate people. You know, these things play very well with Americans who tend to be naive and believe these things, but obviously there's a major operation that's much bigger than Musharraf behind him, and those people make the decision to take people out. Musharraf is more or less a puppet, as are all leaders. It's the people behind them that are working the system. Whether Musharraf comes or goes, they will put someone in his place that will continue to do their bidding. Much as President Bush is a script reader here, he is not really running the country, even though his advisors let him think he is, because he's willingly manipulated. But he really doesn't run the country. He doesn't have the intelligence to run the country, frankly. So the Pakistani government, you know, claims that it has proof that Bhutto's killing was the work of a violent Islamic chieftain with ties to Al-Qaeda and the Taliban. There it is again, Dr. Stan, that old boogeyman, Al-Qaeda and the Taliban, looming again, providing the rationale for continued martial law, and in this case, they're postponing the election. It's interesting that I find that, that the opposition parties are in a little bit of a tough spot. They were going to boycott this election because of election irregularities and the power of the Musharraf regime to alter the election results. And now they're protesting the cancellation of elections. Well, you can't really have it both ways. If you weren't going to participate in the elections, then you can't very well claim something's amiss when they get canceled or delayed. But clearly they're looking for any opportunity to protest and show before the international community that there's a great deal of opposition for Musharraf. In fact, I'm convinced he couldn't win any election had he not bought off at least half the other political parties. And a lot of that money comes from the United States. They're very much into this. But they claim that they have intelligent intercepts indicating that Al-Qaeda leader Baitullah Medsud was behind her assassination. And I've read the transcript, the presumed transcript, and it talks about who the three guys were, and did they do it? Yes, they were the ones who did it, and, you know, they're congratulating each other. Well, you know, this kind of evidence is very easy to falsify. In fact, there's no need to falsify it, really. All you have to do is put out a typed transcript. The actual tapes will be classified. No one will be allowed to listen to them. No one will be allowed to independently verify if these are the voices of the people they claim to. This is the same trick Bush intelligence agencies pull every time they want to justify another intervention in Iraq or Iran. They claim they have intelligence. The press isn't allowed to see it. Congress isn't allowed to see it. We simply have to take their word for it. But, you know, strong counter evidence to the official version by the Musharraf regime has surfaced through an amateur photographer. The UK Independent reported on how this evidence blows open the government story. They say, dramatic new photographs taken seconds after the murder of, or seconds before the murder of Benazir Bhutto cast serious doubt on the Pakistani government's official account of the death of the former prime minister. It doesn't cast serious doubt, it absolutely contradicts it. The three photographs, first published in Pakistan's Dawn News, appear to reveal Miss Bhutto's assassin advancing toward a vehicle, drawing out a pistol, and firing it three shots as a handful of security personnel, quote, ducked for cover. And Dr. Stan, well-trained security agents, as our Secret Service says, don't duck and cover when someone starts firing at the president. In fact, they are trained to leap in the way to save the president. They have their guns out, they aim them immediately where the fire is going, and they start going at it. Apparently these are not well-trained security personnel, or they're working for the other side.
Well, I think that's probably exactly what happened. I know when President Kennedy was assassinated, why they pulled all the Secret Service away from the sides of his car, and they were supposed to be walking beside the car, and if you see the pictures, no Secret Service there. Why? Because they were pulled to the car behind where Lyndon Johnson was riding. We'll be back in just a moment here with Joel Skousen. But, of course, what does the assassination of Bhutto mean? Is there going to be an instability in Pakistan? Is it possible the radical Islamists will take over? Well, we'll be back in just a few minutes to discuss that and many other issues dealt with by World Affairs Brief. Go right ahead, Joel.
Well, you know, it's very interesting. You mentioned the pulling off security on the limousine of JFK. In fact, this happens. One of the security guards, you can see him on camera. He's actually arguing with the supervisor because he knows that's where he's supposed to be. And he has to be argued off the end of that bumper to get him out of the way. He doesn't want to do it. And he's very, very upset. And, of course, you know, he has spoken since then about his supervisor telling him to get off the bumper. And so, you know, in these particular images of the Bhutto assassination, it shows Bhutto supporters and security personnel lowering their heads in reaction to the gunshots. Miss Bhutto has dropped back down into the car, and the suspected suicide bomber has not yet detonated his device. Okay, now that's very important, because this means that, you know, the shots occurred first, and that's where she ends up ducking down. And then, so it couldn't have been, the government story is that the explosion caused the rocking force of her body to put her head into the latch.
Sunroof, right.
That's right. And, but in fact, she was already shot, much like Kennedy was, you know, and part of his head flew off before that actually occurred. Mrs. Bhutto's party has said that she died after being shot in the head and the neck, two shots just before a suicide bomber killed herself. Now, Sherry Raymond, who's the PPP information secretary, dismissed the interior minister's account as, quote, dangerous nonsense. Miss Raymond was in the car when Miss Bhutto died, and when her body was bathed before the burial. And here's what she says. She has a bullet wound at the back of her head on the left side. It came out the other side with a very large wound, and she bled profusely through that. The government is now trying to say she concussed herself, which is ludicrous. It's almost laughable. It's so bad. Now, attention is now shifting, of course, to the government's intervention to prevent an autopsy. You know, it's very interesting, Dr. Stan, that as I listen to this press conference with these reporters talking to Musharraf, you know, they would make these general statements like, many people accuse you of having something to do with the death. What do you say to that? Giving him an opportunity, of course, to blow it off. But they refuse to mention these specific things that would be very difficult, for example, about they're intervening with the autopsy. How can you say to the government official that, you know, she concussed herself when, in fact, we have witnesses saying that she shot twice, major portion of her head was blown off? That doesn't happen in a concussion.
And of course, what's really so interesting, somebody brought me a copy of Time magazine today, and in the Time magazine article, they said that the reason there was no autopsy was because the husband said you couldn't autopsy. In other words, the husband turned down the autopsy. So was it the government that turned down the autopsy, or was it the husband? You know, what they're doing is this planned program of confusion.
Well, the official story from the government is that the husband refused to have the autopsy. But this is a false claim. It's also denied by the family that the husband prohibited it. In fact, it is mandated by law that in a criminal murder such as this, there must be an autopsy. No, in no case has a family member ever been able to stop an autopsy.
Hold that thought, Joe. We'll be right back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, our guest this afternoon, Joel Skousen from World Affairs Brief. We're talking about the assassination of Mrs. Bhutto and the fact there was no autopsy. Now, the government claims that the husband said, you can't autopsy her. I don't want her autopsied. I don't want to turn her over to the government to disfigure her. Well, words to that effect. And, of course, as Joel is pointing out, the law says, you know, here is a murder. By law, you have to have an autopsy. So no member of a family has ever been able to stop an autopsy. In fact, according to Joel, the family didn't want to stop the autopsy. So obviously this is a cover story, as are there so many other cover stories, to keep the truth from getting out. Go right ahead, Joel.
Well, target assassinations like these always have more than one shooter, just as in the JFK assassination and the RFK assassination. Just to remind your audience, in the Robert F. Kennedy assassination at the hotel, they found more bullets when they went through the walls and got all the bullets out that were fired, and the tape recorders indicated there were more bullets fired than Sirhan's weapon is capable of holding. Now, that's absolute proof, because obviously he was jumped on. There was no way that he could have reloaded. This man fired more bullets than the gun could hold. There were other people actually doing the shooting. However, one has to be careful of disinformation sites. There's a big one on the Internet called whatreallyhappened.com from Russia, the only English-language site out of Russia, dishing out regular garbage under the name of Sorsha Faal. It's claimed that the hit was done by three sniper teams from Pakistani special ops. This kind of information is impossible to know unless you were part of the plot. I mean, even Russian intelligence wouldn't know that unless they were part of the plot. I mean, you have to be really inside. So my question about these disinformation sites like whatreallyhappened.com, they claim to be on the pro-conspiratorial, pro-conservative side against the globalist and government. But in fact, they have these too-good-to-be-truth sources. People are anxious to believe these things, but they're absolutely bogus. Certainly the one massive wound she receives indicates that a high-powered rifle bullet, not a pistol, was used, indicating professional snipers. That said, I'm always suspicious of some source who always claims too much insider information. As I said, you can't be on our side and be allowed on the inside of these things. The two just don't mix. Nobody from our side is going to get access to this. If somebody from the dark side is feeding it to them, you've got to be careful because they're feeding disinformation as well.
Somebody just called in and said that the husband wanted to use his own pathologist for the autopsy. The government said, no, you have to use our pathologist, and that was... But of course, this is disinformation, too. The government has the power, and they're going to say, we're going to do the autopsy, period. But they didn't. So the question
is this is a very typical happening happens in all controlled assassinations. They want to control the medical examiner. I can name dozens of cases where you have controlled medical examiners in most counties, especially big major cities. In counties, you have a medical examiner that is on the take, and it will, in fact, do what the government says, produce any autopsy result that they want. They twisted the arm of the doctor at Bethesda Medical Center who had to tear up his original report and change it because he knew that an autopsy had all, not an autopsy, but an alteration of Kennedy's body had already occurred before it arrived at Bethesda. In fact, after they took x-rays of JFK's body, the x-ray technician was walking across the balcony, viewing the opening rotunda leading to the hospital, and saw Jackie coming in with JFK's casket. That's where the body was supposed to be, and he was developing the x-rays that they already had of the body. I mean, that's just absolute proof that the government was running to at least two caskets, trying to avoid the public knowing that, in fact, they were changing the body, altering the body, as David Lifton says in his book, Best Evidence. But in any case, this disinformation source or fall from Russia also claims that U.S. Congressman Patrick Kennedy and U.S. Senator Arlen Specter were scheduled to meet her following her rally, and they were going to give her targeted information about Mazar.
Well, that's unfortunate, but of course, what's it going to do as far as the stability of Pakistan is concerned? Obviously, Musharraf does not have the confidence of the majority of the people in that country. So we're going to be back in just a moment with Joel Skousen. But remember, of course, Pakistan does have nuclear weapons. It does have missiles. Certainly the army is certainly against the... Well, who knows what the army is going to do under these circumstances. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, Joel, you go right ahead.
Well, we're talking about the information about Benazir Bhutto going to meet with Arlen Specter and Patrick Kennedy and Congressman Patrick Kennedy. You're over there on a special fact-finding mission. And I'm really suspicious of this. Specter is a someone that we have to be very, very careful of because he's really no friend of these truth movements. He loves to jump on these types of bandwagons. They were claiming that they were going to present to him evidence of vote rigging so that he could take it back to the United States and put pressure on the Musharraf regime. But certainly, you don't have to wait for a face-to-face meeting to present this kind of information. Although Specter, likes to walk back into the country and wave these documents and get on his bandwagon as a truth fighter, but he's actually a slick saboteur of truth. Your listeners might understand that he was the assistant.
He was the assistant counsel, right?
Assistant counsel in the Warren Commission report, and he's the one, in fact, that was responsible for inserting into the Warren report the magic bullet theory, and that's the theory that one bullet with one trajectory coming from the rear, where Oswald was supposedly firing, went through more than one person sitting in front, fore and aft in the car, which, defies the laws of physics, and then comes out as a pristine bullet without any deformation after passing through JFK, then the shoulder of Governor Connally, and then through his wrist, and then in through his knee, and then dropping out on his stretcher in perfect condition, and taking several 90-degree turns in the air. I mean, this is just ludicrous. So that's the kind of person we're dealing with Arlen Specter.
That was the magic bullet you're describing, the so-called magic bullet.
Right, that's what I said, the magic bullet theory. But it was no surprise to me that Arlen Specter has risen to become a senator. But what's interesting is that he continues to appear in all of his committee hearings as the champion, defending the public against this administration. And yet every time it comes down to resolving the issue, finally he compromises and he votes with the administration. So he's got this reputation of always attacking the administration. But the press doesn't cover the fact very often, or at least give appropriate scrutiny to it, that he always ends up working out a compromise and voting with the administration, or voting and failing to sanction the administration. He never votes to actually carry out any of his threats that he champions. So he is a saboteur of these things rather than a defender of truth against the administration.
All right. Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Joel Skousen, World Affairs Brief. Joel, would you like to tell our listeners how they can get a copy of the World Affairs Brief and perhaps subscribe to it?
Thank you, Dr. Stan. The World Affairs Brief is my news analysis service. It comes out every Friday. It's coming out tomorrow, and I'm maybe a little bit late. I'm waiting for results of the Iowa caucus to be able to comment on those, which I won't be able to probably till tomorrow morning. But it will be out, and people can get a sample copy of the brief to see if they'd like to subscribe by emailing me at editor@worldaffairsbrief.com. There's a lot of good things on the website, a lot of free things, especially all of the top stories of the news each day are posted on my website with a condensed summary, so that if you want to read more, you click on the link and you can read the entire story. But my staff does sort through and post only the best stories that have the least amount of disinformation. All things that come from the establishment media have some errors and omissions. That's what I concentrate on each Friday, putting back the information that you need to know and coalescing from all the sources that I get, the stories that you get it in a condensed form in my World Affairs Brief.
All right, very good. And how can people actually get a copy of it? Is there an email where they could request a copy?
Yes, they can email me at editor@worldaffairsbrief.com. That's written as one word, worldaffairsbrief.com, and simply request it, and I'll send it out to them.
editor@worldaffairsbrief.com. Okay, fine. Pick the story up from there, please.
Well, the autopsy is the big story, except, you know, incredibly, at this news conference, nobody asked him about this autopsy problem. It's why they believe that the Rawalpindi Hospital was forced to change the autopsy report on Benazir, and seven doctors were made to sign it to establish its credibility. I mean, only one is usually required. Once they changed it, in order to beef up its credibility, they had seven doctors sign it. I mean, talk about control over doctors. But doctors have said on the record that the chief of police of Rawalpindi himself ordered the medical team not to carry out the postmortem, which is mandatory by law in the case of unnatural death. I might note that the doctor in the JFK assassination, who was a member of the military services, was also coerced to alter his report. Now, the scene of the attack was also watered down with a high-pressure hose within an hour, washing away any evidence, removing any bullet fragments, any shell casing, anything like that. None of that was allowed to be picked up. So just like the JFK assassination, the Oklahoma City bombing, and 9/11, government made every effort to restrict the crime scene from investigation and then eradicate the crime scene as quickly as possible so that no evidence could ever be found. And this is incredible. This is a pattern. There are too many similarities between all of the cover-ups and the planned assassinations that I have seen. Too many similarities here to realize that this was not planned or at least advised by American dark side forces. So naturally, few people now believe the government account, nor trust the government to do a proper investigation. Calls are coming from all political parties for independent UN or internationally supervised investigation, which the government initially resisted. They're probably going to pull in the FBI or somebody from the United States who can work hand in glove with the ISI to continue the cover-up. You know, this is a favorite ploy of conspirators who perpetrate these killings, to empower, quote, an independent or neutral committee to investigate, and then they staff it with secret collaborators. As I pointed out, that's what they did with Arlen Specter in the Warren Commission. In fact, the whole thing was stacked, except for even Gerald Ford was on the commission, who turned out to be a real yes-man. Warren, it was called the Warren Commission because Chief Justice Earl Warren was put on there to give real stature to it. And, you know, it almost proves that these people were knowing conspirators to be able to sign off on what they did.
Well, I think Congressman Hale Boggs didn't go along with that.
No, and he resigned, didn't he?
I think he was there till the very end, but he died in a very mysterious plane accident along with Nick Begich's
he knew too much.
He could
have documented the manipulation of the committee for political purposes.
And they knew where his plane was, and they refused to send any rescue team. So Nick Begich's dad, Nick has been our guest in the past, and Nick Begich's dad and Hale Belgs died, on a mountaintop somewhere in Alaska, because the FBI refused to send help and wouldn't let any help go. So yeah. It doesn't pay to know too much. Go right ahead.
Okay. There's so many parallels, it's easy to get distracted from the regular story.
Right.
You know,
most people have never heard that story of Hale Boggs, but Dick Riggins right. told me.
Tempers flared as the government predictably used the assassination as an excuse to delay the upcoming election. But as British journalist Robert Fisk noted, it doesn't, after all, take much to comprehend that the hated elections looming over Musharraf would probably be postponed indefinitely if his principal political opponent happened to be liquidated before the polling day. And sure enough, that's what happened. You see the problem, he asked. Yesterday, our television warriors informed us that the PPP members shouting that Musharraf was a murderer were complaining that he had not provided sufficient security. Wrong. They were shouting because they believe he killed her. Middle East expert Juan Cole summed up the long-term implications in his article yesterday on Salon.com, where he said, mobs rampage through Pakistani cities, cars, banks, gas stations are torched, and Sharif's party claims they will boycott the election. Pakistan's future is now very murky, and to the extent that this nation of 160 million buttresses the eastern flank of American security in the greater Middle East, its fate is profoundly intertwined with America's own. Now that's propaganda. There is no relationship between what's going on in the Middle East and America's own destiny, other than the fact that our government is luring our own security into a worse situation by continual intervention around the world, which will eventually end up in a backlash against America. He does note, however, that the money for the September 11 attacks was wired to Florida from banks in Pakistan, and Al-Qaeda used the country for transit to Afghanistan. Of course, this is, although Juan Cole never admits any conspiracy theory, this, what he mentions, is, in my opinion, indications that the CIA was using the ISI to control the funds and the conspirators in the 9/11 attacks. Cole continues and says, I'm appalled by the right-wing U.S. pundits who are taking advantage of Bhutto's assassination to blame the people of Pakistan for extremism. Now, what Cole is on the left, what he means by right-wing is actually neocons. He's against the neocons, and he thinks he paints them all with a brush of right-wing because, you know, that's typical leftist tactics to paint all right-wing people as radical or Nazi or Hitlerites, etc. But he does correctly point out, he says, that Benazir's party would have won at least a plurality in the parliament. The PPP is a moderate, middle-class party and has done well in unrigged elections during the past 20 years. Well, that's a little naive. There has been no unrigged elections, in my opinion. Just as Bhutto was corrupt personally in terms of funneling millions and millions of dollars away into Europe, and that's what she lived off when she was in exile, the Muslim fundamentalist parties, he says, usually get only 3% of the vote. So it's funny how noisy these noisy extremists are played up as if they're the majority, and we're talked about this great threat of Islamic fundamentalism taking over Pakistan, when in fact it isn't really that big a percentage. It may be larger than what Cole says is 3%, but he's pretty good on his numbers in that regard. So I don't, you know, Pakistan, like Iran, has a great deal of middle-class people. And a lot of people who are used to Western things and simply do not want a Muslim fundamentalist to take over the country. And I don't think there is, frankly, a threat of that. I don't think that Musharraf is being threatened with loss of power. He holds all the cards in terms of law enforcement, military, and police power, as well as secret police. Now, Robert Fisk of the UK Independent was more forthright about the real culprits. He said, weird, isn't it, how swiftly the narrative is laid down for us. Benazir Bhutto, the courageous leader of Pakistani People's Party, is assassinated. Attached to the very capital of Islamabad, where an ex-General Musaf Sharif lives. We're told by George Bush that her murders were the extremists and terrorists. It was the Taliban madman again, he says, an Al-Qaeda spider who struck at this lone, brave, my comment actually, corrupt woman who had dared to call for democracy. I don't want to make her out to be a hero. Even her own niece has blown the whistle on how corrupt Benazir Bhutto is. She would have sold her soul to the globalists to get back elected, and the globalists could have worked with her. But Musharraf is their man, and he knows the inside of the ISI collusion with the military, and so he needs to be supported to this time. He does admit, he said, however corrupt Ms. Bhutto may have been, let us be under no illusions that this lady is indeed a true martyr. Who would have imagined, he said, watching the BBC or CNN on Thursday, that her two brothers, Murtaza and Shahnawaz, hijacked a Pakistani airliner clear back in 1981, flew it to Kabul, where Murtaza demanded the release of political prisoners in Pakistan. Here, a military officer on the plane was murdered. There were also Americans on the flight, which is probably the only reason why prisoners were released. So, two of her brothers were, in fact, engaged in acts of terrorism. So this is not a family that, you know, is the paragon of democracy, like we think.
All right, fine. Well, I'm sure that is true, and I think that certainly I think the American government is trying to get some sort of a semblance of a democracy there, but I don't think it's ever going to work. This country has always been ruled by a strong man, a strong woman.
It's true. Here's another piece from Robert Fisk's piece on Bhutto, showing how she was part of the system that created the secret police that does these assassinations. He told the story about when Benazir's father was murdered. One of the witnesses to the murder, his 14-year-old daughter called, whose name was Fatima. I'm sorry, this was the niece of Benazir who called her aunt to ask why witnesses were being arrested rather than her father's killers. This is when the niece's father was killed by the Secret Service. Benazir was the Prime Minister. And Fatima, and this is why she is an enemy today to Benazir, called up her aunt and said, why are the witnesses being arrested instead of the father's killers? And Benazir, indicating her complicity in the system, said, look, you're very young, Fatima. You don't understand things. So she basically waved her off. But these kinds of statements indicated that Benazir Bhutto knew there was a dark side, that they did plan to assassinate her. She just happens to be the object of that assassination this time around. So don't view her as a martyr in any sense at all. He ends up with a quote, which I'll end this subject on, saying, this vast institution, the ISI, is corrupt, venal, and brutal, and it works for Musharraf. But it also worked and still works for the Taliban. It also works for the Americans. In fact, it works for everybody, but it is the key which Musharraf can use to open talks with America's enemy when he feels threatened or wants to put pressure on Afghanistan or wants to appease the, quote, extremists or terrorists who so oppressed George Bush. And let us remember, by the way, that Daniel Pearl, the Wall Street Journalist reporter beheaded by his Islamist captors in Karachi, actually made his fatal appointment with his future murders from an ISI commander's office. So he was set up by the ISI.
Well, it is a very, very unstable place, and it's such a tragedy. There's no responsible leadership there.
How much time do we have, Dr.
Oh, Smith? You have about 7 minutes.
Well, there's another story that's very interesting. The FAA has finally denied a Freedom of Information Act requesting the serial numbers of all the principal parts on the 9/11 aircraft. This is another suspicious act of blocking the 9/11 truth movement from access to crucial information. Now, this is very interesting because these serial numbers are important because there are credible reports showing at least one of the Boeing aircraft, the 757, with the same serial number that was used in 9/11, is still flying and has been in service since 9/11. And so to prove their case, basically 9/11 Truth Movement has petitioned the FAA to provide the major parts, serial numbers, to each of the aircraft that was involved in that, because there were parts recovered, such as in the Pentagon crash, several serialized parts, including wheels, large landing gear strut from the Boeing 707. I've seen the pictures. I've compared them to a Boeing 757 landing strut, and it does match. So this is the 757 landing gear strut that's in the Pentagon building. But some suspect that they may have been planted there, since several witnesses claimed the aircraft that hit the Pentagon was much smaller than a normal 757, even though it was painted up to look like a Boeing passenger airplane, but that it did not penetrate the wall. The fact that a large section of the radome was also found intact inside is also evidence of planting, because this is just a fiberglass radome on the front of these. Any time a plane would crash into a wall, there'd be nothing left of that fiberglass radome. Nothing. Just be shattered into a thousand little pieces, be totally disintegrated. As one witness clearly said, he said the wall held up like a champ when he saw the plane crash into it, and then the plane exploded upon impact. And I believe this is the only viable explanation of why there was so little wreckage on the lawn outside, and why there were hundreds of little pieces of aircraft yet a much further distance away in the parking lots and even in the street. And that indicates an explosion. So I'm inclined to believe this witness has said the wall held up like a champ. The only way that a radome could have crashed into the wall and survived and got inside was obviously not going through the wall. That had to be planted, or the wall had a big hole in it when it hit, and that's a possibility too, because some have indicated there is some indication that a missile was fired at the wall, and that provides the rationale for penetrating three rings of the Pentagon. So there's a lot of problems, and those problems, by the way, including engine parts, landing gear parts, wheels, etc., could be solved if the FAA would give us the serial numbers, because those could be matched against what the government claims are the serial numbers of the parts that they came out. The fact that they refuse, Dr. Stan, to provide those serial numbers indicates they don't want a match to occur.
Yeah, I wonder how they can justify keeping that information back, but they can never let the American people know the truth. And what one of the people in the CIA said, one of the highest men there, quoted in Robert Baer's book, See No Evil, when the dusk finally settles after 9/11, the American people will recognize that what happened was not a failure of intelligence. It was a triumph. It was not a failure of intelligence. It was a triumph.
Wow.
That's the last page of the preface to See No Evil by Robert Baer. We'll be right back. Well, Joel, you've got 3 minutes to finish up there.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the Iowa caucuses that are happening tonight. Hillary's got some pre-caucus spin going, talking about how even a third-place finish would be a win for her. You know, she already knows she's not going to do very well, I think, and is trying to spin the results. She's, of course, already saying that she accomplished everything that she needed to do in Iowa, and she can declare victory even if she finishes in third place. But I'm going to be watching, and I've taken note of the latest poll results. I do suspect that there's been some manipulation of the polling results, especially relative to Ron Paul, they're all over the map. NBC, McClatchy, Mason-Dixon poll puts Romney at 27% and Huckabee at 23%. Des Moines Register is way over that, claiming that 32% of people are going to vote for Huckabee and only 26% for Romney. There's a lot of disparity there. And there were John McCain coming in third with 13%. I wouldn't be surprised if Romney did better than what the Des Moines Register. They're the ones who manipulated the results and their recommendation in favor of Clinton and McCain, which indicated that they have a vested interest in skewing the results. So I'm predicting probably that Huckabee will not do as well, probably maybe more even with Romney. I think McCain may even come in below Ron Paul. I'm hoping he'll break into the double digits.
All right, it's going to be fascinating to see what happens. And when will we know the results? Will it be tomorrow morning?
Very late tonight. There may be some results, but surely tomorrow morning. And I'm going to be delaying my brief so that I can comment on that. One other story that's interesting is that Michael Bloomberg keeps talking about throwing his hat back in the ring, and he's a very big establishment character. If he puts his hat in the ring, it means that neither Giuliani nor McCain are going to make it, and they may need somebody totally new to come in and blow the race open to beat Romney.
All right, but now is Bloomberg talking about running for the Republican position or as independent?
Right. No. Well, I'm sorry. He is talking about an independent run, but if he does that, they're going to try to sway the election one way or the other.
Well, it's going to be fascinating this next couple of months. It's going to be interesting to see what happens. Certainly, Ron Paul is the only one who talks about the Constitution, who wants to get rid of the Federal Reserve, wants to get rid of the Internal Revenue Service, and wants to bring our boys home. Bye-bye. God bless.
Thank you, Dr. Stan.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we seem to have a little trouble with our voice here. A little laryngitis is setting in, but we'll get through the program under any circumstances. This is the time when I need to remind all of our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and we're dependent upon those of you who listen to our programs and believe, as I do, that we're involved in a spiritual battle that's being fought on a political, ideological, and cultural battlefield. If you believe that this is a spiritual battle and behind everything there are spiritual forces, well, we hope maybe you'll want to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters. Certainly you can go to our website, radioliberty.com. You can listen to our radio programs there live. You can listen to them archived. You can listen to them on MP3. You can pull down all of our videos free of charge. You can pull down our newsletters and copy them, and we encourage you to do that. We want you to get the information out. If you want to understand how we have been financing communism since its inception, the pamphlet, The Communist-Capitalist Alliance. If you want to understand the difference between a republic and a democracy, the pamphlet, We Are a Republic. If you want to understand what's happening financially, the pamphlet, The History of Money. If you want to understand what happened on 9-1-1, the pamphlet, Foreknowledge, 9-1-1. And if you want to understand who really rules the world, why you need to get my pamphlets, and they are a three pamphlet set on the occult hierarchy. Because there is an occult hierarchy that rules the world. And if you read what they say, they readily tell you exactly what they're doing. But they figure that the people are so dumb, they will never either read or believe the information. So we've laid it out for you, and we hope that you'll want to get the information and understand that there is a spiritual dimension, and that there are beings that bridge that spiritual dimension. And they're not imaginary. We're warned against them in the Bible. I was reading Deuteronomy 18:10 this morning, and we are warned against all of these efforts to get in touch with the other dimension, and yet there are people who have. You need, of course, to get the videos we have, the 3-hour, the 4-hour, the 10-hour versions of They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll. They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll. You need to get my talk on the forbidden knowledge, my DVD on the Brotherhood of Darkness, our 4-tape or 4-CD set, The Secret Behind the Secret. The information is there. You need to understand it. You need to help us educate people about the fact that there really are secret societies. They've been around for thousands of years. the Council on Foreign Relations is a front for a secret society that was created by Cecil Rhodes in 1891. Why doesn't anybody tell you that? Oh, the reason that they took God and prayer out of our schools is because the Masons control the United States Supreme Court, and majorities are from 5-4 to 8-1 for a period of 30 years, from 1941 to 1971. Why doesn't anybody tell us that? That, of course, is covered in the book we carry, Behind the Lodge Door or Unholy Alliance. Behind the Lodge Door or Unholy Alliance. Until you understand the impact of the secret societies, until you understand the true force behind the scenes, and that is this age-old plan for a new world order, a new world religion, a new world religion, and of course a new world leader. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage, radioliberty.com. Get our new shortwave frequencies there, and pray for America. Pray for